Started. We're going to begin by calling roll. This is a meeting of the Special Occupancy Technical Advisory Committee running with the Structural Technical Advisory Committee. Let's confirm that all of you can hear me.
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes. If you'll make sure your phone is temporarily unmuted, you can hit #6 to mute, *6 to unmute your phone. Some systems are the opposite, or you may have a mute button on your phone that you can use in most instances. Please be mindful that all background noise can be heard and is amplified, whether you're typing on your computer, dogs are barking, or someone's talking near you. It will interrupt the meeting, so be very mindful of that. Please mute your phones if you hear anything going on in the background that could interrupt our meeting today. Again, this is a meeting of the Special Occupancy Technical Advisory Committee, concurrently with the Structural Technical Advisory Committee. Today is March 30th, 2021, and it is 10 a.m. We will begin with the Special Occupancy and call roll. Please answer by saying here. Don Whitehead. Don Whitehead, can you unmute your phone, please? Doug Ahrens. Elijah Flowers.
Here.
Thank you, Elijah. Michelle Haynes.
Here.
Thank you. Alyssa Lotane.
Alyssa Lotane.
I'm sorry, Alyssa, was that you speaking?
Yes, it was. Thank you. I'm here.
Thank you. Con Cole. Con Cole. Crystal Myers.
Here.
Mute your phone, please. You have both your computer and a cell phone attached to the meeting. You need to mute one and use the other. Bob Benson. Scott Waltz.
Here.
Thank you. Don Whitehead, have you joined the line? Doug Ahrens, have you joined the line?
Can you hear me?
Please. Don Whitehead. Doug Ahrens. Quickly, Cole, have you joined the line? Or Bob Benson? We'll come back to this TAC. We do currently have a quorum, but we'll come back to see if any of the members get their lines unmuted. Structural TAC. Please answer by saying here for roll call. David Compton. Michael Beret. C.W. McCumber. Steve Strawn.
Yeah, Steve Strawn is here.
Thank you. And just before Steve, someone else spoke. Who was that, please?
C.W. McCumber is here, but I think his line is muted on him.
Craig Farina?
Here.
Gordon Thomas? Dan Labrick?
Here, good morning.
Thank you, Dan. Joe Kim?
I'm here.
Jamie Gaslam?
Here.
Kyle Fitzmartin.
Here.
Michael Garacio.
Yeah.
We do have a quorum for the structural check as well. Very quickly, we have not answered Michael Beret. Are you here? CW, did you get your phone worked out? Are you on the line? Gordon? And for the special occupancy tax, Don Whitehead.
It's Don Whitehead. Can you hear me now?
I hear you now. Thank you, Don, very much. Doug Aaron?
I'm by phone.
Okay. Doug Aaron? Con Cole? Bob Vincent? We have a quorum for both tax, so we're going to move ahead. Perhaps
Marlena,
if any of the members. Yes.
Sorry, this is Justin Vogel. Mr. Cole appears to be present in the chat. He said that he's not receiving sound on his end. Mr. McComber has also indicated he doesn't have audio. But I just wanted to note that Mr. Cole does seem to be present in the chat area. I don't know if he's muted.
Okay.
And he's phone unmuted.
Yeah, I'm here now. Mr. Cole, can you hear me?
I hear you, Con. Thank you very much. Are you calling in by phone, Con?
Yes, I had to switch over to phone. I'm on the computer for the video, but I had to switch to phone for audio.
Okay, thank you. Perhaps we can let CW know he needs to do the same.
Just did. Thanks, Marlita.
Thank you very much. All right, let's move ahead. Structural check. We would like to approve the agenda as posted if there are no recommended changes.
Laverich move to approve as posted.
Ronald second.
No digit. I'm sorry, who was the second, please?
Steve Strom.
Thank you, Steve. All those in favor of the motion, please vote by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Next, we have the previous minutes, if there are no recommended changes or corrections.
Laverich move to approve as posted.
Second?
Jamie, second.
Thank you, Jamie. All those in favor of the motion to accept the previous minutes, please vote by saying aye.
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 Thank you. Special occupancy will do the same. We'd like to approve the agenda as posted.
Move to approve as posted, Don Whitehead.
A second, Scott Waltz.
Don, the second. Scott Waltz, thank you. All those in favor of the agenda, please vote by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Good, thank you. And the previous minutes of January 23rd, 2020. Need a motion to approve if there are no recommended changes or corrections.
Whitehead.
Waltz second.
Whitehead and Waltz, thank you very much. All those in favor of the motion to approve the minute, this minute, please vote by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. We'd also like to introduce the staff. I am Marlita Peters. I will help facilitate your meeting today. If the other staff members would please indicate their presence on the line.
Mom and Donnie.
Jim Hammers.
Justin Vogel.
Tom Campbell.
Thank you. Do we have Joe Bigelow on the line as well? And I know we have Chris on the line. And for all those listening, we are 2 minutes in recording, so we ask that you please be mindful that we have many people on the line today. Please be respectful of others talking. Let's try to take turns Again, be mindful of any background noise so we don't interrupt the meeting. And speak clearly. If you're having to spell your name or speak your name, please do so clearly and please so that we can capture it on the recording and in our minutes. We have several guests on the line as well today. For those of you who would like to be acknowledged for the recording, please indicate your presence.
Amon Issa, University of Florida.
Thank you, Mr. Issa. Thank you, Mr. Shock.
Sean Harvey, St. Lucie County.
Thank you, Mr. Harvey.
Joe Belcher.
Thank you, Mr. Belcher.
Carlos Lanza, the petitioner.
Carlos Lanza, thank you very much.
Michael Kasten with Tracti Building Systems.
Thank you, Michael. Michael, is that Gascon, G-A-S-D-O-N, or T-O-N?
It was Tracti Building Systems, T-R-A-C-H-T-E.
Thank you. What is your last name, please?
K-A-S-T-E-N.
K-A-S-T-E-N. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do we have any other guests on the line?
Yes, ma'am. Robert Alfert, A-L-F-E-R-T as in Tom, from the Nelson Mullins Law Firm.
Thank you.
Randy Shackelford.
Any other guests? Mr. Shackelford, thank you very much. Any other guests?
Amanda Hickman with the Hickman Group.
Thank you, Amanda.
Aaron Phillips, Asphalt Roofing Manufacturers Association.
Thank you. Any other guests?
Hisham Luna with AERS and ACEC Florida.
And I'm sorry, we missed your name, sir. Could you repeat
Hisham,
that, please?
Yes, it's in the chat. Hisham Suna, or not in the chat, but in the participant list. H-I-S-H-A-M, Hisham Suna. The
Suna,
vertical.
Thank you very much.
A-C-E-C.
Thank you, Mr. Suna. Any other guests on the line?
Bob Vincent just joined, sorry.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks for checking in.
My name is Milad Shabanyan. I am from IVHS.
Milad, would you spell your last name, please?
Yes, it's Shabanyan, S-H-A-B-A-N-I-A-N.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shabanyan.
Further
guests on the line that would like to be recognized, please. Have any of the other TAC members for either the structural TAC or special occupancy TAC joined the line? Okay. Hearing none, we're going to move ahead then to our first item on the agenda. We would like to review and accept the interim draft report for research project titled Evaluation of the Cost Impact and Benefit of the 2021 I-Code Changes. Mr. Madani, did you want to open this?
Yeah. Good morning. This is Mo Madani. And as stated in the agenda, today we are really, we'll have the opportunity to get a status of the project evaluation of the cost impact and benefit of the 2021 International Building Codes Prescriptive Code Changes. This is a project that was approved by the Commission cycle of the research program. As we have done during the prior code change process, we normally execute this project to find out the potential or the additional cost to construction from the adoption or the potential of adoptions of the latest code changes to the international codes. And I think on the line with us, the principal investigator, Raymond Issa, Dr. Raymond Issa. Summary of the interim report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mo. Good morning, everybody. Can I share my screen? Yes, I can. Here we go. So, okay. So, there's about 10 pages of changes here in code. Some of them cost a minimal increase, others cost a minimal decrease. For example, S10, here we go. S1019, there would be a saving if you were able to reuse the aggregates from the existing ballast, but you are not, then there is no saving. S1719, talking about the gutter securement, we figure out that's going to cost you 6 pennies per linear foot. So this is also a minimal increase in cost. The wind resistance, as far as the parapets is concerned, the increase would be minimal depending on the design. There was a change in the classification of buildings from occupancy to use, so more buildings would fall within the risk category three, wind category three for design purposes, and that would cause some of these buildings to increase in cost. It depends on the building and the type of assembly. You know, we're talking about daycare, educational facilities, or assembly halls. In this case, there's various formulas that you can use. So then S5619 talks about fixed ladders and ship's ladders, and that would cause an increase, which is minimal compared to the cost of the building. The fall arrest lifeline and rope descent system, that increase would also be minimal depending on design practice. Some buildings already meet that. Uplift loads on floor and foundations, again, that's a minimal cost depending on design practice. Design rain loads for ponding purposes, those also depend on the existing practice. Required special inspections and tests of concrete, S9719. A lot of this is already incorporated in ACI 550.5, so depending on existing practice, the cost may be minimal. Mass timber construction requiring more inspections, and that would be about 15.15 and 0.3% of the total cost of the building for inspection purposes, so that again could be classified as minimal. S17-19 is relating to seismic risks and storage racks, so it doesn't really apply here. Garage door and rolling doors, S10919 requires the application of a label on the door, and that's minimal cost. The label itself would cost about 15 to 20 cents, and then the cost of putting the label on. Same thing for the wind S1019 about the label for wind worn debris protection. The frost requirement in Florida, that would be minimal since we have very few areas that would have this type of frost. The stress, allowable stresses for deep foundations that involves piles and concrete grouted in compression or cast-in-place components. Again, that would be minimal and only on some projects. The same thing for Allowable stress is materials used in deep foundation elements like steel. The change of the allowable stress for the steel, again, that depends on the project, the type of project, and it would be minimal compared to the overall cost. In deep foundation elements, the allowable stresses, you know, for concrete, again, the allowable stress is increased here, so you would have the same case as in the previous case. Allowable axial loads are changed, and that would be a minimal decrease in cost. Several of these files, and then S-133-19 talks about the splices. This only applies specifically to seismic zones, so we don't have to worry about it as much in Florida. Shafts and unstable soils, there's decreasing cost, but it depends on the type of project, and it's only applicable to some projects. The vibratory driving of the piles, again, you have the same minimal cost change. It depends on the type of project where the piles are being used. And then the clay plaster, which allows you to use clay instead of cement, this again only applies to highly specific projects and would be minimal cost comparison wise. And then the lumber decking is minimal based on designs, whether you run the decking diagonally or you run it horizontally or vertically, that would impact the cost. So that's minimal also. The cripple walls, that's about the OSB sheeting around the walls, and this allows you not to be using those sheetings, and that again is a design issue. It's a minimal base of the type of design and the cost. And the water resistant barriers, which causes an increase in cost depending on what type of materials are involved in the wall. And so that's the IBC structural, the IRC structural items are RB16419 talks about the minimum width for concrete, width and thickness for concrete footings. There is a in some cases, a reduction in width. In other cases, an increase in size. So it's minimal based on the design compared to the total cost. The form materials and form ties, depending on the type of form and form ties you use, there might be a minimal decrease in cost. The steel reinforcement is based, there was a change in the strength of the steel allowed, and that impacts the design, and the cost decrease will be minimal. In 179.19, we're looking at the cost decrease based on the difference in price between number one and number two, Kiln Dryings Southern Pine. This is in the updates to the footnotes to the table. In 185.19, your plastic composite guards, here the increase is about $1 per square foot. Then beam decks, there's a change here that the overhang cannot be but a quarter of the distance between the spans. So depending on the cantilever and depending on the design, you may have an increase or a decrease in cost. And 190.19 talks about the decks, beam span lengths, and that's the same as the previous one as far as the cost, depending on the cantilever. Then the decking, we go back to the diagonal versus horizontal or vertical layout of the decking, and that would impact a decrease in cost. The fastening schedule, we're increasing the number of fasteners, would minimally increase cost compared to the overall cost of the structure being built. And the same thing, the alternate attachment allows us to, in some cases, use more fasteners or shorter fasteners, all these fastener-related items, and the cost increase will be minimal. The next one involves wind adjustments and seismic factors, and that applies to SFB and HPS products. Too soft of bracing and the thickness of the penetration of the fasteners. RB 214-19 talks about the fenestration manufacturer's written installation instructions for windows and doors. And 215-19 talks about right here. 215-19 talks about labels and garage doors, and like we saw in the IBC, you're looking at 5 cents to 15 cents. The wood structural panel soffits, the increase in cost of minimal. It depends really on the design. The minimum fastening requirements for R&R 251-19, again, it allows you to count some of the thickness toward the penetration depth, which may impact fastener lengths and sizes. And 252-19 talks about furring minimum fastening requirements. And it adds a 15 pounds per square foot option for clashing. In this case, it eliminates engineering costs involved in the design of this component, and so there's a decreasing cost in that situation. The minimum fastening requirements for over foam plastic sheet and support cladding weight, here again, the thickness of the wood structural panels, so we use those, add to the penetration thickness, and so the cost is minimal if you take those into consideration. The cladding minimum fastener requirement for direct attachment over foam, you have the same situation where if you use brick veneer ties attached to the wood, then again, you have a reduction in the fastener length or the materials it fastens into. And the testing for wood products in 258-19 is an increase in cost because there's an increase in testing requirements. The roof framing fastening schedule adjusts the strength for uplift connectors required for option one, and that would be an increase in cost, but this minimal compared to the cost of the building itself. And then here we have some renderings as to how that works, the gable ends. Uh, 275-19 talks about underlayment, and that would result in some changes in underlayment, which will result in a 10 cent per square foot minimum increase. So that's, again, minimal compared to the overall cost of the structure. And so those are the main points so I want to return the screen back to you, but I'm not a here we go. I know I went through this a little bit fast, but I see you have a full agenda, so I didn't want to take too long. Are there any questions, comments? Again, this is ongoing, subject to change.
Thank you, Dr. Issa. Anyone from the structural tech have any questions, clarifying questions for Dr. Issa? Hearing none, anyone from the special occupancy TAC, do you have questions? Is there anyone from the public with questions or comments? Hearing none, structural tack, we would entertain a motion to accept this draft report of the evaluation of the cost and benefit of the 2021 ICO changes.
Laverich, move to accept as submitted.
Yeah, Gracia, second.
Laverich and Gracia, thank you very much. Any further discussion, structural tack members? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion to accept the draft report, please vote by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. Special occupancy will entertain the same a motion to accept.
Whitehead, accept as posted.
Oh, Walt, second.
We have a motion and a second to accept the draft report as stated. Any further discussion, TAC members? Special occupancy TAC? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion to accept the draft report stated, please vote with saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. Now for our next agenda item. Thank you, Dr. Issa, for your report.
Welcome, and thanks, everybody.
Our next agenda item is to discuss the petition for declaratory statement 2021-005 by Carlos Lanza of CL Contractors Corporation. The Commission's attorney, Justin Vogel, will introduce the petition and discuss some threshold legal issues that need to be addressed. Then we will follow our usual process of hearing from the petitioner and the public. Mr. Vogel?
Thank you, Marlena. Good morning. As you have probably seen from the brief analysis posted to the agenda, my recommendation is that this petition be declined, since the petitioner appears to be concerned with having the commission weigh in on the appropriateness of certain past and ongoing projects of other individuals. Having said that, I will note that there could be legitimate ways of posing very similar questions to what the petitioner has via a deck statement petition. However, in this particular case, his motive seems fairly clear. I'm going to read from an email that was sent to our office, which is included on the agenda from March 15th. Mr. Madani, it was a pleasure speaking with you today regarding my declaratory statement submittal and Mr. Harvey's response. Throughout all of our conversation, you remind me that a declaratory statement can only be made on future projects and under the current code cycle. If there is an ongoing construction under the 2017 FBC regulations, similar to what is currently occurring in the specific development within Mr. Harvey's jurisdiction in Port St. Lucie County, and a declaratory statement or clarification is needed due to a material code violation and possible life safety issue, please provide the appropriate venue in which this can be accomplished. I've been unable to locate within the Florida Administrative Code where it states declaratory statements are only available to future projects and under current code cycle. Please provide where such stipulation can be found. Well, I provided the citations he requested in the analysis, and I would submit that this is not the appropriate venue for addressing his particular concerns. Declining this petition would not deprive the petitioner of an avenue of relief if the local authority were to render some interpretation of the code that he disagreed with. He would have the ability to appeal that and then go through the binding interpretation process afterward. He could also submit the same questions that he has right now through the non-binding interpretation process, which doesn't have the same legal restrictions that declaratory statement petitions do. So it will be up to the TAC to decide as a preliminary issue if this petition meets the criteria for issuing a declaratory statement. If it does, then we can work through a technical discussion of the question. I'll be available for any legal questions that you have throughout this meeting. Marlena?
Thank you, Mr. Vogel. Mr. Madani, do you have anything further to add to the staff analysis as presented
by
Mr.
Vogel? At this time, no. Thank you.
Thank you. Our petitioner is on the line, Mr. Carlos Lanza. Sir, do you have any comments that you would like to add to our meeting today before we take it to the TAC?
Yes, good morning, TAC members. The request that was made for the declaratory statement was based on, I have clients that are currently have property seaward of the coastal construction line and have requested me to design their homes and have used the example of the houses that are currently being built within the development as what they would want me to design. As the architect of record, I am in conflict or disagree with the interpretation that is being provided currently. The email that was sent to Mr. Madani was in addition to my initial request for the TAC, which was based on a potential design that my clients want me to provide them. And the pictures that were provided were of current homes that my clients have visited and were interested in being done or being designed with the habitable spaces down below the flood criteria. So I tend to disagree with the attorney's response that my request for a declaratory statement is based on previous constructions. It's based on a future design that my clients want me to design based on current conditions that are existing. So again, the deck statement that I am requesting is for clarification of items which I believe are in conflict within the code or ambiguous in the code. And I respectfully request that this TAC entertain my request and clarify these items. Thank you, Mr. Lanza.
Now, is Mr. Alford an attorney representing you, Mr. Lanza, or is he for another case?
No, I am the attorney for St. Lucie County. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any comments at this time to add?
Yeah, actually, let me amplify what Mr. Vogel has submitted. And the committee may recall that we did submit a letter in response to the petition. It was addressed from the county attorney's office, Assistant County Attorney Catherine Barbieri, where we laid out clearly our position why this is not an appropriate vehicle by which Mr. Lanza can raise these interpretive issues. From our perspective, what he's really doing, as Mr. Vogel points out, is basically chastising the county for things that may have been done, you know, years ago on different projects that were designed and constructed. They were designs that were certified by an architect and a structural engineer. What we do not know is exactly what Mr. Lanza has teed up for his own clients, assuming he's actually designing a residential structure in this community. As far as I know, nothing has been submitted to Mr. Harvey for a permit review. So I don't see how there is an actual justiciable issue for this petition for declaratory relief. As Mr. Vogel has noted, if you look at the Florida statutes that basically apply to these kind of declaratory statement proceedings, and I'm looking at particular Florida statutes 120.565, subsection 1, it's very clear that a person may seek a declaratory statement regarding an agency's opinion as to the applicability of a statutory provision, or in this case, a building code. I don't see where there has been an opinion that has placed Mr. Lanza in confusion or in conflict with any of these designs that he's referenced. So I don't see how there is a justiciable issue today for this committee to review. There are other avenues for him to proceed, but this is not one of them. So we are in accord with the staff analysis and the commentary and the recommendations of Mr. Vogel. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. We also have Mr. Harvey on the line. Did you have any additional comments, Mr. Harvey, that you'd like to add?
I have no comments at this time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Structural type member.
I'm so sorry.
Yes.
Anthony, I'm the attorney for Carlos Lanza. I just wanted to give my two cents, if that's okay.
Okay, sir. And your name again? You broke up in speaking. Anthony?
Lanza.
Anthony Lanza?
Yeah.
Go ahead, sir.
So just to go off what was just said, It's important to note that Mr. Carlos Lanza cannot design until we get clarification. This is a very important issue. He does not want to be faced with any liability, put future homes at risk. And in regards to other recourses, I've had previous discussions with Mr. Vogel and some other members. Essentially, the conversation came to your only recourse is to get non-binding authority or basically sue in civil court. Now, what we're trying to do is avoid all this. And, you know, based on the previous comments, seems like they were trying to say Mr. Lanza has a past history or trying to cause some issues in regards to the past. No, this is a current situation that's happening in Port St. Lucie. They continue to allow homes designed in this effect that will only, you know, affect future homeowners, but this issue is also being solved in the West. So we're trying to eliminate all this. It seems that, you know, it's okay until a major storm happens, and then that's when everybody decides to do something about it. We just ask that you guys actually take a look into this and hear our petition.
Thank you, Mr. Lanza. Structural TAC members, do you have any clarifying questions before we go to the public for questions or comments? Anyone on structural TAC?
This is Jamie Gaskin.
Hearing none. Go ahead, Jamie.
Just one question. Has a building permit for this for the project in question been filed with the jurisdiction?
Doug Harvey, I can respond to that. We do not have one in-house that I am aware of at this point, moment in time and space.
Thank you.
Mr. Lanza, can you answer that? Have you applied for a permit?
Yes, no permit has been submitted for the simple reason that it defeats the purpose to design a structure or a residence when there appears to be a conflict and it would be relevant for me to present to the building department a set of plans which in my opinion are non-compliant and would and not compliant with the code, which would be a violation in itself.
Thank you, Mr. Lanza. Structural TAC, any further questions or comments? And Jamie, I'm presuming that answered all of your questions.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Special Occupancy TAC, any further questions or comments?
Mm-hmm.
Hearing none, is there anyone from the
please.
Public that has questions or
say
comments?
Yes.
Excuse me? Who's speaking, please? Is someone from the Special Occupancy TAC trying to ask a question? Thank you. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to ask a question or comment? Hearing none. Structural TAC, back to you for further discussion and or a motion.
Laveridge.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion that based upon advice by our attorney and also by the staff analysis that the declaratory statement is not an appropriate means for determining the conduct of another person. In this particular case, this petition should be declined. I move that we support that opinion and decline the petition.
Horacio, second.
So we have a motion by Mr. Laveridge, seconded by Mr. Horacio. TAC members, structural TAC members, do we have any further discussion or questions? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion to decline in support of the attorney's recommendation, please vote by saying aye or nay. Or please vote by saying aye if you accept the motion, please.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion stands. Special Occupancy TAC. Further
Whitehead,
discussion and or go ahead, Mr. Whitehead.
It's the same motion. I agree with the structural TAC.
Do we have a second?
Waltz, second.
Do we have any further discussion from anyone on the special occupancy tax? Hearing none, all those in favor of the same motion to deny, please vote by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. The motion stands. Special occupancy tax, that's going to conclude your meeting attendance today. You are welcome to stay on the line or to hang up. We would like to see if there's any further tax business you'd like to bring at this time to the meeting. Hearing none, we're going to do a final roll call. We'd also like to welcome our new members on both the special occupancy tax and the structural tax. Thank you for joining us today and for your participation. For final roll call, special occupancy tax, please answer by saying here.
Marlita.
Don Whitehead. Yes.
Marlita, there is no need to do a roll call at this point.
Okay, thank you. And TAC members, you're welcome to depart the line if you wish or stay on the line and listen to the remainder of this meeting. Structural TAC members, we have another deck statement to review. Deck statement 2021-006 by Michael Kasten of Building Systems. Mr. Badani, do you have this staff analysis for us?
Yes. Yes, ma'am. This is Mohamed Ghani, and on the agenda, you will find the staff analysis for DS 2021-006. The petitioner in this request is seeking a declaratory statement with regard to whether the product in question, steel roll-up door, are required to meet material thickness requirement of section 2222.4.3 of the 7th edition 2023 for the building code building. Mainly ask if our door made with 26 gauge material passed the requirement of task 201, 202, and 203, would we still be required to meet the 24 gauge material thickness requirement as stated in 2222.4.3? And the petitioner gave us here some background information. The manufacturer currently has a state product approval, FL8055. This approval meets the 2017 Florida Building Code as a limited in use to outside the high velocity hurricane zone. The manufacturer currently is planning to test the door for test 201, 202, and 203, and mainly to see if that his product can also be used within the high velocity hurricane zone, meaning that Miami-Dade and Broward. Looking at the for the building code, the 7th edition, chapter 22, you see section 2217.1, which says the minimum thickness of material shall not be less than as set forth in the applicable standard listed in section 2214.3, except as otherwise set forth. And so there's a specific requirement in the code under 2222.4.3. It says metal sidings and roof panel shall not be less than 24 gauge. So tell us that really the, in this case, the component cladding or the siding for the building in general, for the roof and for the walls, with regard to the metal, it should not be less than 24 gauge. Based on that, so the again for staff analysis, the question as stated in the petition If our doors made the 26 gauge material, that's the requirement of TAS 201, TAS 202, and TAS 203, would we still be required to meet the 24 gauge material thickness requirement as stated in 2222.4.3? The answer to this question, the answer to the petitioner question is yes, as per section 2217.1 of the 7 edition 2020 for the building code building, and in addition to passing the requirement of TAS 201, TAS 202, and TAS 203, the product in question must also comply with the 24 gauge material thickness requirement of section 2222.4.3 of the 7 edition for the building code building. Thank you.
Mr. Kasten, you're on the line. Do you have any legal representation with you as well today?
No, I don't. We're just doing a marketing study. There had been some discussion as to whether or not we would have to maintain the 24 gauge, because I had made the request out of Miami-Dade earlier this year, and they meant the statement they gave me was that the gauge was given so that it was harder to cut into it, into the material. Our doors are used on public storage buildings. They are non-occupied buildings. They are secured to concrete pads. I'm sure you've all either used them or driven by them. And if the requirement was to pass TAS requirements for the impact loading, I've got doors that already maintain and can handle 180 miles an hour in some sizes. And the limitation we have is we do not have a roll former. Now, that's not to say we wouldn't move in that direction to a roll form 24 gauge material. But if it passed all the impact testings that Mr. Madani just shared with you, my question was, would there be a possible area that we could allow this to move to 26 gauge in maybe some specific cases rather than going back to the 24 gauge, which at this time we don't have equipment to manufacture?
Does that complete your comments, Mr. Kasten?
That'll do it, ma'am. That's all I have. Thank you for the consideration.
Thank you. Structural TAC members, do we have any clarifying questions before we go to the public? Hearing none, is there anyone from the public who wish to ask questions or make comments on this subject? Hearing none, TAC members, back to you for discussion and or a motion.
Marlita, this is Steve Strong.
Go ahead, Steve.
So as I'm reading this, it really comes down to the ability to cut into that door metal. In other words, if this particular door is able to meet all of the loads, the impact loading and strength loading, it seems to me that the design of that door is suitable for the application as a storage unit door or garage door. But we're hung up on this 22.7 or 2217.1 material thickness is sort of a vague requirement. Can Mr. Madani or somebody explain that, please?
Arlito, this is Jamie.
Go ahead, Jamie.
Yeah, Steve. In reference to the minimum gauge thickness for these building envelope products, especially when made with single skin materials, plays a hand in hand with the forced entry requirements.
Sure.
And these minimum thicknesses less than those specified in this section, it's being used to protect, or although it may not be habitable in a sense, it is protecting property, any storage that's housed in there. So for the forced entry protection, these minimum gauge thicknesses have been established. The performance and the design profile of whatever slats are formed and assembly is configured would then be subject to all of the TAS performance test protocols, but at a minimum for these forced entry requirements, this minimum gauge thickness kicks in and has been established in the high velocity hurricane zone for a number of decades at this point.
Jimmy, I appreciate it.
Can I, this is Mike Kasten again. Could I possibly comment?
Not at the moment, Mr. Kasten. It's up to the chat to have their discussion.
That's right.
But if the chair feels.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This is Steve again. I appreciate Jamie's comments on that. If it's all about more than anything else, the forced entry resistance rather than the structural or impact loading on that. If there's a design that this firm has that prevents, whether through supports or whatever, that would prevent a forced entry, then maybe there's some consideration there. But the hard part of this is the code is at least in section 2217.1 is pretty clear.
If I may add, this is Jamie again. Specifically, if it were designed in, say, for example, an insulated makeup where you have, in this case, as an example, two skins of 26 gauge,
sure,
that may serve to address the minimum thickness of a 24 gauge because now you have two 26 gauge materials or skins there. So okay, an insulated makeup, that's one way of addressing or not having to necessarily, that's the alternative rather is what's considered.
Sure.
Could be considered.
This is Dr. Kim.
Go ahead, Mr. Kim.
Just a comment. I mean, I understand that 24 gauge is not a performance requirement, but from what Jamie said, it's more or less a prescriptive minimum thickness requirement. A question for Jamie, is there a performance standard for entry, forced entry, that defaults to 24 gauge, or is that just a figure that you guys came up with Miami-Dade? It's been used historically, and I'm okay with that. So, you know, unless the petitioner has an issue with, you know, why the minimum prescriptive requirement is there for a 24 gauge, and that's what it is. So if he's not okay with the 24 minimum gauge, he has to go for a code change. But if there is a prescriptive forced entry performance test, then you can try to see if that meets the 26 gauge beats that. But you know, from what I can see, that 24 gauge is a prescriptive minimum requirement, you know, based on, you know, whatever historical performance that Miami-Dade feels is minimally required. So I don't know if Jamie could add to that or not.
Yeah, I'm trying to see where the question is, but as far as a performance under forced entry, there is forced entry requirements called out in the TAS 202 protocol. The door, obviously, in a closed position is subject to numerous load, axial loads, perpendicular loads and such. It's not so much, it is in a way performance-based in that regard, but again, we've got these code sections establishing minimum prescriptive starting points to prevent any such forced entry is the legacy as to where this stems from.
If you know, manufacturer can say, well, my 24 gauge can meet the forced entry load requirement, does that mean it's okay?
Not with the way in which the code currently reads, I would say no.
Right, so there's a minimum prescriptive thickness that it has to be met regardless.
Yeah, this is Mohammed Dani. I just want to add something here. I think when you look at the code, I think, yes, the code has in it two specific requirements. It has in it the requirement, its prescriptive requirement, which is really, as it stated in section 2217.1, and you have the performance requirements, which is the testing. And if you look in the code says, hey, you know, there's a prescriptive requirement, prescriptive requirements to receive the performance. You still have to meet the prescriptive. And now that the only way that you don't need to meet the prescriptive is through alternate material method, and that's a different subject here. The question here is that, you know, even if you do the testing, do you still have to meet the prescriptive requirement? And the answer is yes, at this point, based on the information provided.
Thank you, Mo. I appreciate that clarification. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other structural? Go ahead, Mr.
Laverich. Yeah, staff analysis has stated that the answer to the question is yes, and I think it's pretty obvious that the code specifically requires the 24 gauge, and we can sit and discuss, you know, the whys and what fors and so forth, but I don't think this is the right arena to do that. I think if the petitioner wants to pursue it further, that he should pursue it perhaps with Miami-Dade through product approval and also through a proposed code change. I think a code change would be necessary unless some specific alternate materials and methods would be proposed. But in this particular case, the question we have before us, I think, is clear. The question is, do you have to meet the 24-gauge requirement no matter what? And staff has said yes, and I would propose a motion that we adopt staff's recommendations as answer yes.
Russell, Jamie Gaskin, I'd like to second that and propose an amendment to how it's currently worded on the screen with two corrections. The reference to TAS 303-94 should be 203-94.
Right.
And the last cite for the seventh edition of the Florida Building Code should be 2020.
Correct. Thank you, Jamie. That's
right. And so with that amendment, I'll second it.
Laverich, I accept the amendment. Thank you, Jamie.
Do we have any further discussion, questions, or comments from TAC members? Mr. Compton, do you wish to entertain any further comments from Mr. Kasten before we take our vote?
If he feels that he needs to speak to this, I guess we could hear it.
Hey, gentlemen, I appreciate the time today. It was just a question I had about it, and I guess I understand where the limitation on the 24-gauge is in the code, which obviously makes things very difficult to move forward off of that. And I'm not part of this membership, but just as a side, I know that we can get into 24, 22, 26, 20-gauge material with a $30 battery-powered skill saw from Home Depot. So I just a thought, I mean, I recognize where you're at, and I appreciate the codes. We stuck by them as well, and I did not entertain that forced entry side for the limitations on the 24-gauge. I appreciate the clarity, and I think that's what we got. I appreciate your help today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, TAC members, if there's no further discussion or questions, we will call the vote on the motion as stated. All those in favor, please vote by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion stands. Is there any other TAC business to be brought before us today?
Laverich.
Hearing none. Go ahead, Mr. Laverich.
I just have a comment, and the comment goes to Mr. Schock. I'd like to express my condolences for his recent loss. My sincere condolences, Mr. Schock. So sorry to hear.
Well said, Dan. I second that.
Likewise.
We all second that.
Yes. Very difficult.
Absolutely. Mr. Schock, the staff feels the same. Do I have any further comments from the public today? Hearing none, we'll complete our final structural tack roll call. Please answer by saying here. David Compton?
Here.
Michael Beret? Steve W. McCumber?
Here.
Steve Strawn?
Here.
Greg Perina?
Here.
Gordon Thomas? Dan Laverich?
Here. Thank you, Marlita.
Joe Kim?
Here.
Jamie Gaskin?
Still here.
Cy Pivardin?
Here.
And Michael Garofalo?
Here. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. It's 11:06, and this meeting is adjourned. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you.